Welcome on into the Jazz Talk Podcast. I'm your host, CJ Dieters. First of all, before we get into talking about the latest games, first, we've got some pretty big Jazz news to go over. So, the Jazz have made a new addition to their front office. They have hired Danny Ainge to now be CEO and alternate governor. Which basically means that he oversees the front office, and if at any time they do a board of governors meeting, which basically means all the owners in the league get together, they have their meeting about, you know, all the different things and affairs within the league, that Danny Ainge could fill in for Ryan Smith if absolutely needed. That's what the alternate governor means. But for the most part, he's being brought in to kind of be an overseer of the front office, very similar to the role that Jerry West plays with the Los Angeles Clippers now, but he was involved with the Lakers during the Shaq and Kobe era, and involved with the Golden State Warriors also when they were starting their, you know, their big run about 10 years ago or so. So that is what Danny Ainge is going to be doing. Now, if you're not familiar, Danny Ainge was the general manager for the Boston Celtics for the past, I think, 16 or 18 years. He started in 2003. He retired, well, quit that job this last year, so 17 years. And he had a really good run with the Celtics. They won a championship underneath him. You know, he's the one that pulled off the big three trades, getting they already had Paul Pierce, but going out and getting Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, brought in Tony Allen to the team, brought in Rajon Rondo through the draft, and they were able to win a title, and they were in contention to win a title for about a 3 or 4 year period. Now, as far as daily operations and the GM role, that will still be Justin Zanuck's job. So Justin will continue to be the guy that is making the calls with everybody in the league. He'll be in charge of the salary cap, all the day-to-day things. And the plan is that Danny Ainge will just be there to lend his voice at times, to just make sure that, you know, something that the Jazz are looking to go into, if it's super risky and there's a really high chance that it doesn't work out, that he'll be there to kind of make that final decision. But as far as I know, most decisions will come down to Justin Zanuck. But with that, so the Jazz are right now on an 8-game winning streak. They are playing against the Spurs, and I can't remember if that's tonight, which is Saturday, or if that's tomorrow on Sunday. They'll be playing the Spurs to go for their 9th straight win. In the last few games, they played against the Los Angeles Clippers in their last game. Now, this Clippers team was without a few guys due to either COVID restrictions or just sitting guys out. But for the most part, they had the majority of their crew together. And this is the team that, you know, last year, even with Kawhi Leonard injured, beat out the Jazz in the playoffs in the second round, moved to a five-out system to make sure that Rudy Gobert couldn't just hang out in the middle. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell was dealing with his ankle injury. Mike Conley was hurt with his hamstring. So this was, anytime the Jazz get up against the Clippers, it's a time for them to figure stuff out and get themselves ready for facing them in the playoffs, because there's a very good chance that the Jazz will go up against the Clippers again in the playoffs. Now I think that the Jazz, if healthy, are still the much better team. Now if Kawhi Leonard comes back, then, you know, it's probably even on the talent of both teams. But I would give Quinn Snyder the nudge just a tiny bit over Tyronn Lue as head coaches. That being said, though, last year I think Tyronn Lue did an amazing job with that Clippers team. They probably should have lost in the first round, and they beat the Mavericks. They probably should have lost in the second round against the Jazz, and they were able to figure that out. And then they are able to push the Phoenix Suns to, I think, six games in the conference finals, again, without Kawhi. But the Jazz were able to really just bounce on them. The Clippers didn't go to a five-out system. They kept a center in at all times. So I'm wondering if they're going to look to save all the switching and all that kind of stuff until the playoffs so that the Jazz can't get a good feel for it. But the Jazz dominated in this game. You know, Rudy Gobert almost had another 20-20 game. I think he had 20 points, 17 boards. You know, Donovan Mitchell dropped in another 26. But there are no spectacular performances, but this Jazz team has so many offensive weapons that if they play solid defense and shots are going down at least pretty well, they're going to win most of the games they get into. Now, I don't remember the order of the last few games that they've had. I think it would be the Sixers would be next. So the Jazz played the Sixers. Joel Embiid was healthy. The whole team was healthy. You know, Ben Simmons still isn't playing, which I don't see him ever playing a game in a Sixers uniform again. He'll most likely be traded and be playing for somebody else. But that's how they've been all season. So you can't discount what the Jazz did to the Sixers with something that they've been dealing with for the entire season. And the Jazz, they kind of ran it up on them. That game was never really close. Towards the end of the game, they were able to get, you know, guys like Malik Fitz, Jared Butler, Eric Paschal into the game. Which, before we move on, that's something I want to talk about real quick, is that, so Eric Paschal, I thought, did a pretty good job playing that backup power forward while Rudy Gay was still recovering from injury. You know, the Jazz were still winning games. They weren't as dynamic offensively. The defense wasn't spectacular or anything like that, but I think he did a pretty good job. And now he is basically completely out of the rotation. Now, if they're destroying teams, then, yeah, he'll get a few minutes in garbage time at the end, which it's kind of a two-sided thing, because it's a good thing that the Jazz have that extra depth of a guy that has played with these main guys and can do a pretty good job. But at the same time, you know, I feel like the Jazz could possibly use Eric Paschal and another younger guy with a smaller contract in a trade to get a guy that would fit better with what the Jazz need. But that's something, as the Jazz get closer to probably making a trade, we can look further into who they would actually look into to sending out. And then the game before the 76ers, the Jazz played the Washington Wizards, which they play, especially on the defensive end, well, on the offensive end as well, they play very similar to the Jazz. They want to spread it out with all four guys and then have a rim-running center. Daniel Gafford is their guy. You know, he's very athletic, very good rim runner, pretty good at protecting the rim. But the Jazz kind of just ran all over the Wizards. Again, they were able to get into garbage time, get some of the younger guys in towards the end of the game. But all throughout this run, Donovan Mitchell in the last eight games has been averaging just under 30 points a game. His shooting numbers have been up. Rudy Gobert's had a bunch of games where he's been right around a 20-20 game. You know, so right around 20 points, 20 rebounds. They did part of this without Hassan Whiteside and Rudy Gay had to step up and play the backup five. And then when Hassan Whiteside came back, he's been hungry. He's kind of sat and watched as Rudy Gay kind of had the potential of stealing away Hassan's minutes, and he came back and had, I think it was like 14 points and 8 boards in his, 16 minutes in his first game back, and he's been getting after it. I kind of think that he knows he doesn't have nearly the same impact that Rudy Gobert has on the court when he comes in. And if Rudy Gay can make the offense as amazing as it has been with him at the center, there's a chance that Hassan Whiteside loses those minutes. Even though he's a very capable backup center, they don't need tons of backup center minutes, and Rudy Gay can do a decent job of filling in for that time. I kind of think we're up to date there. Let's see, because we talked about the Cavaliers in the last episode. So, yeah. I'll just say, as far as recent games go, we're pretty much up to date on what the Jazz have been doing. Again, Danny Ainge has come into the front office. Before we get into talking about the Spurs, let's take just a quick minute to talk about possible trades or roster additions that the Jazz could make. So first off, the Jazz are very far over the tax, so any trade that they would make would have to be basically exactly matching salaries. They do have the trade exception that was created by sending Derek Favors to the Thunder, to where they could take in somebody that makes right around $9 million straight up. But as far as how far into the tax they are, that would cost them, that $9 million would cost them more closer to like $35 million when you add in all the tax payments plus the $9 million in salary. So I don't really see them using that, at least not now. Maybe in the summer they could use something like that. But what I really think that the Jazz are going to be looking for heading up into this next trade deadline here, which is in February. Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report has already said that the Jazz are looking for a defensive wing. Now, to get a super high-level guy like that, that can shoot, you're looking at an all-star. You're looking at, multiple first-round picks, and like $30 million in salary. I don't think that's what the Jazz are really looking for. What I really think they're looking for is a guy that, in that 6'6 to 6'9 range, 220 pounds or so, long, that can defend on the wing, and every now and then knock down an open three on the other side. But somebody that when they get into a playoff series and say, like Ja Morant is killing them, you can throw this guy at him and slow him down, or throw him at Kawhi Leonard, at Paul George, at LeBron, and not stop them, but at least start to slow them down, especially in one-on-one. That's where the Jazz really struggle on defense, is when the other team can go one-on-one, and especially if they can spread Rudy Gobert out to where he's not right underneath the basket. So what I'm kind of thinking as a framework for a deal would be using two of the younger guys' contracts that they have. So you're looking at Udoka Azubuike, Elijah Hughes, Mie Oni, Jared Butler, Eric Pascal Siakam. One of those five guys, put two of them together. The one that I think is probably makes the most sense would be Azubuike and Mie Oni. Oni's contract is going to expire at the end of the year. Udoka Azubuike has two more years on his deal. He's a very, very athletic and huge center. He's just had injury problems. I could see a team, deciding that maybe he's worth the investment into a quality backup center. And then, as far as picks go, the Jazz really can't trade a first-round pick until about 2026. They could trade that and 2028, but that puts you out 7 years with draft picks. You're starting to get a little risky there with doing that. Now, I should clarify that because of the NBA's step-in rule, it basically stops teams from completely destroying their future. So what the rule is that you cannot trade first-round draft picks in consecutive years. So the Jazz have, they owe their 2022 pick to Memphis. So because of the step-in rule, they cannot trade their 2023 pick. They owe their 2024 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And because of the step-in rule again, they can't trade 2025. So 2026 is the next available one. So they could trade that or 2027 or 2028. But the thing is, the Jazz have a very small window, I think, with this exact group. Joe Ingles is in his mid-30s. Rudy Gay is in his mid-30s. Bojan Bogdanović is getting close to his mid-30s. Mike Conley's in his mid-30s. Jordan Clarkson and Rudy Gobert are just about to turn 30. This team, as currently constructed, has, probably about a two-year window. And then after that, you're going to have to find a way to reconfigure this team around Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. And so you're going to want those future draft picks. Now, if the right guy comes up, then I don't think Justin Zanuck and now Danny Ainge would really hesitate to pull the trigger to get that guy that's going to hopefully help push them over the hump and get them into true championship contention. But the kind of guys that I see are, Sene Miaoni and Azubuike, and one, maybe two second-round picks to get these guys so they can hold on to their first-round picks. So first off is Torrey Craig. Torrey Craig plays for the Indiana Pacers. Now, the Pacers have said that they are looking to kind of reset this team, send off some of their veterans, start building around some of the younger guys, even though they don't have a super young team. Kind of just reconfigure things and make it to where they're not just fighting for like a 7th or 8th seed. They're actually, contending in the East. So one guy that makes a lot of sense within the Jazz sending two guys and a couple seconds, which would allow them to trade for a guy that makes somewhere in the $4 to $5 million range, is Torrey Craig. So Torrey Craig is a combo forward. He plays small forward and power forward. He's about 6'8", 220 pounds. He's a fantastic perimeter defender, a very good team defender. He's not a good shooter, and this year he's actually shooting the worst three-point shooting he has his whole career. He's shooting 26% from three, and he's kind of fallen out of Indiana's rotation because of not being able to hit shots, and they're pretty deep on the wing. And so I think they would at least listen to an offer of Udoka Azubuike, Miaoni, and 2 second-round picks. What this would give the Jazz is another guy that can take on the best wing, offensive wing on the other team. And then on the offensive end, I think with the wide open shots that the Jazz generate, he can shoot, 34%, 35. He's not going to be shooting the same way that all the other guys on the Jazz do. But this is a guy that you're if you stay completely healthy, you're thinking maybe 10 minutes a night for this type of player. There's 2 other guys that I'm kind of looking at with the same kind of configuration of a trade. Next would be Dorian Finney-Smith. He plays for the Dallas Mavericks. About 6'7", 210, 220, somewhere in that range. Again, another combo forward. Oh, we need to slow down. Plays more primarily the power forward at this point for the Mavericks, and that's just because they don't really have much depth on the wing. And so I think if you were to work out a trade with the Mavericks, you'd probably have to switch out Udoka Azubuike for like Elijah Hughes. So send them Oni and Hughes, which would be two young wing players. I think getting Finney-Smith would be a little tougher than getting Craig. First off, the Mavericks are in the Western Conference. They're not too far behind where the Jazz are in the standings. Currently, I think where they're both teams are, they actually play each other in the first round of the playoffs. But again, it can't hurt to at least just ask the Mavericks if they'd be interested in this type of a deal. And then the last guy would be Mo Harkless from the Sacramento Kings. Again, makes about $4.5 million. Four and a half, I think. Right in that range. He's about 6'9", 220 pounds. Very long. Used to be an amazing athlete. He's still a very good athlete. Very good defender. Again, not going to drain threes, you know, even with wide open shots that the Jazz will generate for him. He'll be, you know, in that 33 to 36% range probably. But again, this is a guy you're looking for in the playoffs. Maybe he can give you 10 minutes of just really solid defense. So nothing too flashy for the Jazz as far as this trade season goes. Now, they could decide to shock everybody and put, you know, some of their main guys together. You know, maybe they decide they want, like, Pascal Siakam from the Raptors. And they put, you know, Bojan Bogdanovic and Joe Ingles together, plus the 2026 first, and go get Pascal Siakam. They could always do something like that, but it's just not what I'm expecting. So finally, let's take a look at the San Antonio Spurs. Again, I can't remember if they're playing them tonight or if it's tomorrow. So this Spurs team, they're very young. They're in a tough position because they haven't really gone into a full rebuild because Greg Popovich is still their coach. And he's in his 70s at this point. I think once they get a new coach in, it'll be immediately like tear down and figure out what young guys you want to start building around for the future. But as of right now, their top players, you have Jakob Poeltl at center. He's, you know, a mini Rudy Gobert, not nearly as athletic, but, you know, just as big, you know, 7'1", long arms, long body, has good instincts on the defensive end. On the offensive end, you know, he's a rim runner, again, not as athletic as Rudy, so he's not as much of a threat, but he can, you know, slow guys like Donovan and Mike Conley down when they go into the paint. Next is DeJounte Murray, who may actually be their best player. He's a do-it-all point guard, averages right around 16 points, 8 boards, and 8 assists. He's a triple-double threat basically every night. And then on the defensive end, he's very long and athletic, has great instincts, very good defensive point guard. Keldon Johnson basically plays the power forward for them, even though he's about 6'5", 6'6", somewhere in that range. Very athletic, very aggressive. You know, he's a guy that will get on top of the rim in a hurry. And then, decent defender. And then, from there, they just have a lot of solid guys, like Derek White, Lonnie Walker, Drew Eubanks, they do their job. And then you have a couple of three-point shooters in Doug McDermott and Brenton Forbes. So this is a team that if you're not ready for them, they can beat you. But if the Jazz are ready to go, they're focused, there's really no reason that they should lose to this team. You know, the Jazz just have so much offensive talent right now, and the defense is starting to clamp things down a little bit. So I would expect the Jazz to win, and relatively easily, you know, somewhere, you know, probably a 12 to 15 point win. So not completely destroy this team. I think the Spurs have enough talent to not get completely destroyed. But I don't see this being a very close game, though. But yeah, with that, I'm going to go ahead and end this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. You know, have a great day. Yeah, I guess there's nothing else I want to say. So go Jazz!